Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 28th of August, 2018. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn. As I discuss the world of sports and pop culture, we are live here on my YouTube page, so you can check out us streaming live here from my YouTube page. Of course, this podcast will be available to my Blog Talk Radio audience probably sometime later on tonight, early tomorrow morning. I'm trying to get it out later tonight, 11:30-ish. We'll see. Or, again, at the latest, early tomorrow morning. So if you are a frequent listener of Blog Talk Radio, that will be available very soon. Happy to be back with you on a just absolute scorching summer day. You can tell summer's about to be over. You can tell summer's about to be over because we've been these last couple of days of just blistering the heat. Before you know it, it will hopefully be, you know, in the 70s, get that 70s and that cool air in the morning and in the overnight. But this right here is just some, you know, this is that Arizona, you know, I couldn't even say Arizona heat. This is just hot. It's just blazing hot. There's nothing like DC humidity. DC humidity feels, if it's 98, it feels like it's like 110. But could be worse. You know, it could be one of those tennis players at the U.S. Open who just, you know, never played in heat before. I mean, they don't make them like they used to. They just don't make them like they used to. I mean, I know the John McEnroes and the Yvonne Lendl's of the world are just laughing at these dudes. I mean, these could have, you know, heat exhaustion. You know, like they don't play in the Australian Open, which is like 150 degrees. I know it's a dry heat, but still, I mean, my goodness, guys, you know, not passing out, but geez, ice packs and, you know, all kinds of nonsense with that. So you had three or four players retire from the U.S. Open because of heat exhaustion. So, you know, they, you know, struggling there as, should be a fun U.S. Open, with the big four back in play, or the big three. I don't count Andy Murray in that mix. Is, you know, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic all together for the first time since 2015. We'll see what happens with that. But we begin with August 25th. August 25th, which was a historic day, in the history of music, because on that day, the late great Aaliyah passed away tragically in a plane crash, August 25th, 2001. And you had the release also August 25th, 1998 of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. One of the great albums of the decade, without question, a legit top five definitive album from an artist who never lived up to that, hasn't lived up to that since she released that album. And it's interesting with these two, with Aaliyah and Lauryn. You know, Aaliyah passes away again tragically with the plane crash, having released three albums in an 8-year time span from 94 to 2001. She releases three albums. All those albums go at least double platinum. Worldwide success. Not a budding superstar, an absolute superstar, and frankly, a generational talent. Then all of a sudden, you know, just like that, she's gone. And, you know, for the last 17 years, you know, Aaliyah is a perfect example of what could have been, if she was still alive. Think about that, you know, with Biggie. I would say Tupac to a lesser extent, because Tupac put out so much music, even after he's put out so much stuff, you know, made it record over 200 songs and had so many albums come out, even after he died. Biggie, of course, only had two albums. Aaliyah, you know, again, for the amount of time that she was alive, for the amount of years that she was active in music, she did a lot. I mean, recording three albums, the tours, the compilation albums, and all this, you know, the movies. You know, she is a perfect example of somebody who, you know, got the most out of life. Like, and I always subscribe to this. It's not about how long you live. Everybody wants to live long. Hopefully you want to live, you know, 80, 90, 100 years. It's about what you do with the time that you're here. quality over quantity. So the other hand, the flip side, you have Lauryn Hill. Lauryn Hill comes out with an album that to this day, again, to this day is frankly one of the best albums I've ever heard in any music, in any musical genre. That album is an album that is a once in a lifetime album for a once in a lifetime talent in Lauryn Hill. You're talking about someone who, without question, is the greatest female rapper of all time. It's not even close. All due respect to Queen Latifah, all due respect to MC Light. I'm leaving out Eve, who else I'm leaving out there? Nicki Minaj and some of the newer female artists. But Nicki Minaj, Cardi B hasn't come out with enough body of work yet, though, who knows, 5-10 years, she could certainly, another 4 or 5 years, she could certainly be up there. But there's no question that Lauryn Hill, by far and away, is the greatest female rapper of all time. And in her heyday, peak Lauryn Hill, she could go bar for bar with, frankly, any MC out there, male or female. She was that level of talent. And to see what has transpired in the last 20 years, or what hasn't transpired, I should say, out of her career, frankly, is just one of the great waste of talent in the history of music. Now, it was going to be hard for her to repeat that album. It was going to be almost impossible. Look at Nas, look at Jay-Z. They didn't repeat Illmatic or Reasonable Doubt. Those are clearly the best albums, but they did release other albums that became classics. But you look at Lauryn Hill, and you just wonder, again, what could have been? It's a different type of what could have been than you think about with Aaliyah. I'm not going to get into the details and speculation of what happened to Lauryn Hill. Clearly there were some personal issues, some stuff that she, had to work out and still is working her way through. I know she's been on, done a couple concerts. She released another, not a studio album, but had the MTV Unplugged album, which was, it was some good, decent work. Pretty good album. It was, had a couple nice songs on there. But again, she's released one album in 20 years. Somebody who we should be talking about as one of the most singular talents in the history of music. I mean, we should be talking about Lauryn Hill as one of the most definitive artists in the 20th century. That's how talented she is. There's no question, there's no two ways about it. So one hand, you got Aaliyah, who got the most and beyond the most out of her talent and out of her short time on this earth, 22 years old, 3 albums, went through the whole, the R. Kelly situation, bounced back from that, got to a point to where she was separate from R. Kelly, to a point to where you almost forgot that she even, that part of her life even existed. When she left, when she passed away in 2001, she was so far removed from the R. Kelly stuff. That stuff was like another lifetime ago. And again, still waiting on Lauryn Hill. And chances are Lauryn Hill, it'll just be one of those, could have been, should have been, but wasn't. But for one summer in 1998, Lauryn Hill and that album, she had the best album in music, and she was the it person in music for that particular summer, for that particular year of 1998. There was no question about it. And she still is a part of one of the great hip hop groups of all time in terms of the future. So she's had it, even with the underachieving as a singular artist and as an individual artist, you put together her complete body of work with the Fugees and that, and the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, that is still a Hall of Fame worthy musical career. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot that could have been with her. There's a lot, you know, that again, we'll all wonder about, who knows? I mean, listen, maybe she could have a Tiger Woods type comeback. Maybe she could have a Tiger Woods type comeback, possibly. It's still relatively young, still has some time. But August 25th, a day that, you know, changed that, you know, music would never be the same. You know you're getting older when you can remember when you start listening to music and it starts taking you back to moments or places where you were at when you first heard the album or when this happened. Like when Aaliyah passed away, I was at Temple University. Lauryn Hill came out with the album. That was my first year at Temple, and I, you know, remember purchasing the album at the gallery in gallery in Philadelphia, not Gallery Chinatown, D.C. Gallery in Philadelphia. So that, you know, that's when you start getting older. You know, you don't have those moments in your 20s or in your teens when you remember stuff that happened in 98 when you were like 15 and remember things when you were 5 years old. So, you know, it's fine. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with age. Age is a blessing. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, we have a busy, busy program. A lot to talk about for a hot August night, evening. Football season basically has started for college. They had a couple meaningless college football games last weekend. If you just had to watch football, so you had a couple college games this weekend. College comes in full swing. They'll have four ranked matchups, Alabama, of course, be in action, trying to defend their championship, their number six for Nick Saban. The big matchup, of course, of the week, Auburn-Washington should be a great game opening weekend. We will talk more about the college football season in a later podcast coming up later this week. I'll get into some college football, a little bit of NFL as well. Speaking of the NFL, of course, you know, you had Odell Beckham becoming the latest highest paid wide receiver in or one of the highest paid players in the league, highest paid wide receiver. Again, market value, even if you hate Beckham, even if you detest the stuff he does, some of the stuff that he did, his antics on the field, you cannot deny his talent. The bottom line is this is a contract. You're giving this contract not to a 29, 30-year-old. You're giving this contract to a guy who's 24 years old. So I have no problem with the contract. The Giants have made their bed with Beckham. They're going to ride with Beckham. They're all in with Beckham. That's fine. But what I don't want to hear, and I started hearing some of this nonsense today. I want to hear about this whole change or Odell Beckham. You know, his trip over the Jerusalem, and he's practicing. He's taping his workouts and all this other nonsense he didn't have to do OTAs without the contract being signed. They knew that contract was going to get done. Let's be honest here. Let's not kid ourselves. That contract was in the works for weeks, maybe even throughout the course of the offseason. There was no way that the Giants were not going to re-sign him. We know that they have been drinking Odell Beckham Kool-Aid since he basically made that one-hand catch on Sunday Night Football against Dallas. So, it was never a doubt in my mind, as much stuff as they had allowed him to get away with, that he was not going to be a New York Giant for the foreseeable future, and that he was not going to end up being the highest paid wide receiver in football. It was just a matter of how much money. It was just a matter of when it was going to happen. It was not going to even remotely come close to threatening this happening not before the season started. That was not going to be the case whatsoever. I don't want to hear this idea that he had himself as a man to the New York Giants to show them that he's committed to the organization, that he was ready to be a leader, and that he was this changed person. He's more mature and all this other nonsense. The main concern you have for the Giants in terms of Beckham is the injury. He is who he is. So you're getting the world-class talent. He is the most physically gifted receiver in football. He's not the best. I still would take Antonio Brown. I still would take Julio Jones over him. But he is the most physically gifted receiver in football. He's not the most dependable. He doesn't have the best hands. But you know what you're getting from a talent standpoint. You know that. But you also know what you're getting in terms of a lack of maturity, a lack of leadership, a guy that's going to dominate the locker room, a guy that puts the D in diva, a guy that is about him. And so I see something different on the field. So I see something different in terms of some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth. Then I will continue to believe that he is a selfish diva who happens to be just extremely talented. So that, like, the this whole idea that Beckham's this changed man nonsense. I mean, give me a break. And again, the Giants don't have to sit up here and convince us or the rest of the world that this is why we gave him the money. He's a talented player. His talent warrants that type of contract. Okay, like the numbers he's putting up in his first 4 years warrants that type of contract. He's put up prior to last year when he was injured, but those other 3 years he had put up. He put up some all-time great numbers. He got off to as good a start to his career as any receiver in the history of the league. So, we know it's a pass-happy NFL, but you don't have to sell us on his talent. But don't try to sell us on this, again, the new Odell Beckham. Get off that. Let us see that, Let us see that. Let us see that with actions. Let us see that over the course of the season. Let us see, let's not be talking about the celebrations or on the field antics or getting dumb penalties because of the celebration or doing things to hurt his team or throwing people, coaches, players under the bus. So he gets his contract, no surprise whatsoever from that standpoint. Couple other things as far as in regards to and something I didn't get a chance to talk about. I know it happened last week in regards to Ohio State's decision with Urban Meyer. Here's what I'll say without going to full blown Rillo rant mode. If I were a mother of a college football prospect, high school top rated college football prospect that had the talent to go to Ohio State, I wouldn't allow my child to go to Ohio State in a million years, okay? It is clear what Ohio State is about. It is clear that they value Urban Meyer over the protection of women and over the respect for women. Urban Meyer... And Urban Meyer, we know Urban Meyer can coach. We know Urban Meyer is an all-time great coach, has accomplished everything that a coach can accomplish. We get that. But I don't want to hear about this Urban Meyer core value nonsense or how good of a guy Urban Meyer is or how real and genuine Urban Meyer is. Urban Meyer got exposed throughout the course of this situation. He got exposed for who he really is. And that's just another guy who is willing to sacrifice, who's willing to put winning over everything, win at all costs. That's who Urban Meyer is. And again, he's not the first head coach. He's not the first college football coach or college coach to do it in college sports. He will not be the last. But this whole idea that Urban's this great guy, these core values, his belief in people, this wholesome, all these great things that are said about Urban Meyer, the man, I don't want to hear about it anymore. Urban Meyer showed you his true colors. And listen, I guess I was naive thinking that they were going to fire him, but, the red flag was out when all this came out, and then they initially say that they immediately went to the, we're going to take a couple weeks to investigate. at that point, there was no way that he was going to lose his job. They're not going to investigate, have a two-week investigation, then come back and say, oh, Urban, you have a job. That just wasn't going to happen. So Ohio State has to save face by pretending that they went through this thorough, you know, trial of the century type investigation, you know, JFK type investigation, when in reality, they knew what they were going to do from the beginning. Give them this little smack on the wrist. 3 meaningless games in September, and then come back, and then he'll come back. We'll win a couple, you know, win a couple Big Ten games, and everybody will forget about it. And again, Buckeye, the whole Buckeye Nation, no one, unfortunately, their fans care less about these women, care less about Courtney Smith, care less. You know, they're out there with rallies, with the pom poms, you know, chanting Urban's name. So, as far as I'm concerned, Urban is one of the first survivors, celebrity, political, or sports-wise, of the Me Too movement. He's probably one of the first ones to survive it, because there's no way that he was not aware of what was going on with his assistant coach. There's zero chance of it. And again, Urban Meyer showed you who he really is and what he's really all about. And it's not certainly about protecting women or being anti-domestic violence. It is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, Urban Meyer has to live with himself. Again, and I'll reiterate this, there's no way if I were a mother or father, for that matter, of a top high school prospect, football prospect, that my son's going to Ohio State. Or forget about if I had a daughter going, I wouldn't allow my daughter to go participate in Ohio State athletics. And you still had Gene Smith as the athletic director. So that goes without saying. Urban Meyer gets a slap on the wrist. And again, none of us, if any of us at all, should be surprised by that. Again, I thought that they might show some guts and get rid of him. I was dead wrong, naive and wrong at the same time. And then there was really no threat when you think about it. There was really no threat that he ever was going to lose his job. That just was not going to happen. Real Deal Podcast, broadcasting live here on my YouTube page. Of course, this broadcast will be available via a number of platforms very soon: Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. 15 to 20 minutes after this show is streaming, it will be broadcast. Not broadcast, but it will be available through YouTube. So I will be putting out the pages. Putting out the pages. Broadcast, Block Talk Radio will have to wait, a few hours or so, but it will be available via YouTube and other platforms. iTunes probably normally waits a day later. So iTunes, you can go to itunes.apple.com, look up Real Deal Podcast, and it'll be available via iTunes. As early as tomorrow. So you had the retirement finally of the last of the big three in San Antonio with Manu Ginobili, 16 years as a Spur, 23 years in basketball at the age of 41. And Manu Ginobili is the perfect example of a player who exceeds what his final career numbers were. 13, basically, you know, for his career, he was basically 13-4-3. But what that stat line doesn't tell you, it doesn't tell you how many big shots he made. It doesn't tell you all the playoff minutes. It doesn't tell you that this guy was fearless when it came to playoff basketball. He was fearless when it came to wanting to make the big play, take the big shot. And he grew up. Remember, he came to the NBA late, played a lot, was an international superstar, and that's what's going to get him in the Hall of Fame. I understand he won four championships, but he was never the best player on any of the Spurs championship teams. He was he played a role, but again, those championships were about began and ended with Tim Duncan. Let's just keep that real about that. And I don't think any Spur in their right mind, anybody who watches basketball, would argue that. But Ginobili came up in the NBA era of the golden era, as far as I'm concerned, of the two guard. Think about who you had to face off against during his time in the NBA. One year against Michael Jordan. That was Michael Jordan's last year. That was his rookie year. But put Jordan aside for a second. Talking about Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, Allen Iverson, Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady, Steve Francis, Ray Allen. You know, he's going up against all the Klay Thompson, James Harden. I mean, a lot of people talk about the golden era of point guards. Ginobili played in a golden era of two guards. It was loaded. The NBA was loaded every single night with great two guards. A few of which would be in the Hall of Fame without question. And he didn't back down from any of them. Was fearless and was a guy who was the epitome of a San Antonio Spur. Fearless, handled his business on the court, never low maintenance, never heard a teammate never heard a Spur say a bad thing about him. Somebody who was respected and adored by one Greg Popovich. And a guy who, again, played better, put up better numbers in the playoffs, and this was typical of him, put up better numbers in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. You knew what he was going to get from Ginobili night in and night out. And again, how, you know, sixth man for the better part of his career, when he was in peak Ginobili, could have started for, 80% of the teams in the league easily, maybe even more. But did whatever it took to win, was the epitome of the word winner. When you look at a winner, you're looking at a guy, at an athlete who does the little things without complaining. He does the stuff, the intangibles. He does the stuff that don't show up on the stat sheet. And that was Manu Ginobili to a T. He was a guy that you wanted on your team if you were trying to win a championship. Yeah, I enjoyed watching him play. I remember many, many battles he had with Kobe Bryant. I loved watching him play. Had that kind of herky-jerky. Had a little old, like a better, he was like a more athletic old man. That herky-jerky style that you could, of course, the Euro step. He, kind of felt like he brought the Euro step in the league. It felt like nobody was doing it before managing Kobe. Now, then he started doing it. Everybody started doing it. But a guy, again, he could have easily went to another team and averaged 20 and been a five or six-time All-Star. What you didn't realize, he made a couple All-Star teams, made a couple All-NBA teams, was MVP, finishing the top 11 in MVP voting three times, which I didn't realize. I went through his basketball reference stats, didn't realize that. But, again, he was the epitome of a winner. And it was time for him to retire. I mean, that's the guy. It's 22, 16 years, 23 years of basketball. I mean, think about it. This guy played 23 professional years of basketball. 23 years. He's been playing professional since he was 18, 41 years old. He was on that team, famously, was on that team that really, he really is partially responsible for when you think about it, he really is partially responsible for the changing the face of U.S. basketball. Because remember, 2004, the USA embarrassed themselves in that Olympics. They had Carmelo, LeBron team with a bunch of other guys who wouldn't even probably wouldn't even sniff the team on these recent redeem teams or dream teams. But it was a LeBron Carmelo led team, and they got embarrassed in the Olympics, lost to Argentina, won, ended up winning a bronze medal. And that's when the whole basketball changed as far as that's when basketball changed when Jerry Colangelo took over. He brought in Krzyzewski, they brought in Kobe Bryant, brought in Jason Kidd, some veteran players. And really, they haven't looked back since and have been just basically unstoppable in international competition since. But that loss in 2004 catapulted the whole program building of USA basketball. It was no longer getting just the best players and all just an all-star team. They started building a program, having garnering 2 year commitments, 2 to 3 year commitments from guys. So Ginobili was in part responsible for that with his play during that Olympics back in 2004. I put a poll question up on Facebook a couple of like last night. Who was the better Spur, Ginobili or Parker? Tough to go, you can go either way, but I probably would lean towards Parker. But to me, Parker was closer to being the best at his position than Ginobili was. I never regarded Ginobili as a top two guard. There was a small period of time back in, you can make a case in 2013, in 2014, where Tony Parker could have been arguably the best point guard in the league. Now, I never thought he was the best point guard in the league, but arguably he was in that discussion. And Tony Parker was also a Finals MVP when Tim Duncan was still in his prime back in 2007. So that those two things probably lean towards Tony Parker. But in money time, in crunch time, if I need a bucket, whose hands I want the ball in, last 5 minutes of the game, last 4 minutes of the game is Manu Ginobili. If I need somebody to make a play, it's Manu Ginobili. You may remember he made the pass in the 2005 Finals to Robert Horry in that game five against Detroit. Horry cans that three. San Antonio goes up 3-2 and ends up winning the series in seven. So that he made those type of plays routinely. Routinely, he made those type of plays. And again, if now, as far as he's going to be a Hall of Famer with what he's done, four championship, and also with what he's done in international play. But I'm going to be fair. If you took away his international exploits, and you took away what he did internationally, I would not put him in the Hall of Fame on just what he did in the NBA myself. I'll be honest with you. Because I would not put him in the Hall of Fame, because the bottom line is he was, for the most part, the third wheel on a team in the early years, maybe in the fourth or fifth wheel on championship caliber teams, on Spurs championship teams. Remember, you had Robinson. Ginobili was really an afterthought on that 2003 championship team. It was still Duncan, Robinson, Parker. 2005 team, he really came of age and probably was their second best player in that 2005 run behind Tim Duncan. 07, Parker was their second best player. You can make a case Parker was their best player, but I probably would lean towards it was Tim Duncan. Tim was still at the end of his prime in 2007. So, I probably would lean, bottom line, he's gonna be a Hall of Famer, but if you took his, he made his bones in what his international play. That's what, he came in a legend of international play with what he had done with Argentina. So that's where he really was at his absolute best, and that's where I mean, he absolutely he never dominated the NBA, but he dominated international play. But when you combine international with what he did in the NBA, there's no question that this guy will be a surefire Hall of Famer without question. So you have an era of Spurs basketball that's over. Parker gone, Ginobili retired. Even with Kawhi Leonard, with him moving on. So Spurs basketball, it's gonna be a different type of Spurs team come this season, and a different, just a different era of San Antonio basketball, and really for the first time in their history, the unknown, like who, we just don't know what Spurs basketball will look like moving forward. They'll be in the playoffs, but for the better part of a decade, the better part of a decade and a half, you could always count on Duncan, Parker, Ginobili. Probably you rank in threesomes. I still would go Kareem, Magic, Worthy, Celtic, Parish, Bird, and then in the modern era, I'm going post Russell Celtics, because they had about 8 or 9 players, or even 7 to 8 players that you could have went. Probably the third greatest trio in NBA history. So I'll go Magic, Kareem, Worthy, Bird, Mikal Parrish, and Duncan Parker, in that order. Real Deal Podcast, 28th of August, 7:21 in the evening, as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. You will, those of you, spoiler alert. So it's Tuesday. If you have not seen Power, you have my permission to just cut the podcast off of the next anywhere 3 to 5 minutes. But most of you have seen Power. Of course, you had this past episode 8, Friend of the Family. They made us wait 2 weeks, and it was the payoff on the wait was worth it. You had a all-time classic Power episode, arguably the best episode in the history of Power, arguably. Still up, I will put it up there with Loyalty in season 1. I'll put it up there with Help Me season 3. That was the episode that Holly got killed by the at the hands of Tommy. So I'll put it up there with those two episodes. But it's definitely a definitive episode of and a game-changing episode moving forward in the series in terms of the death of Kanan at the hands of Tasha and Angela, and to a lesser extent Tyreek. So it was basically Tasha was the mastermind with all of this, and was the mastermind behind all of this. But here's what I say: I can't sit here and complain about Kanan being taken off, because 3 seasons ago I thought he should have been killed in season 2. Like, this dude's gonna survive a burning fire and getting burnt basically almost to a crisp, and gonna break out and find, That was a little extra for me, so I'm not gonna go too crazy about his character being taken off. But I will say this: there was still some story to be told with his character. Like, they could have stretched out to season 6 without it being an obvious, it's just 50 Cent staying on because he's the executive producer and co-creator. Like, there was some real stuff going on with he and Tyreek as far as storyline that could have went into season 6. But again, I gather. And you start hearing about these rumors prior to the show, to the season premiere, about when people were making predictions and basically saying that 50 Cent was so busy that, he probably would be killed off this year because of how busy he was, with that fact that he was going to direct episodes in season 6, and that he's also doing stuff with BMF, BMF and some of the other things that he was doing. I still didn't believe it. I still didn't believe it. That they were going to do it. It was one of those things I had to see to believe. But, listen, they went for the shock value home run, and they frankly hit it out of the park. There's an episode that people are going to be talking about for the rest of the season, even though they still have 2 episodes left. It puts Courtney, Courtney can go now, say things like no one is safe, even though that statement to me doesn't mean anything unless one of the big four die. I mean, one of the big four, I'm talking Ghost, Tommy, Tasha, or Angela. They're still on the board. I'm not taking it. I don't want to hear about everybody. No one's safe unless one of those four die. One of those fours are taken off the board. And none of those four are going to be taken off, are going to be get killed off until the final season. Let's just make that clear. Tommy's not going anywhere. Ghost, of course, he's in the last probably scene of the whole series. But, I think what they wanted to do, and I think what their strategy is to use Kanan's death to propel Tariq's character. So now the challenge for them is going to be, and for Michael Rainey as an actor, he's going to get, he's already a series regular, but come season six, does he have the chops to not carry the show? Because he's not going to be asked to do that. But does he have it, does he have the acting chops to be a primary figure in the show? Like, it'll be the big four in Tyreek next year in Power. Like, those will be, like, those force, you'll have those force around the characters, which the plots and stories will always be about. And Tyreek will be a very close fifth, will be like 4A. As far as top billing next season, without question. This year it was the big four and Kanan. Now Tyreek and Michael Rainey Jr. takes that place, takes 50 Cent place in that pecking order. Again, a lot of people are knocking him as an actor. I don't think he's a bad actor. I just don't think we've seen him have an opportunity, and rightfully so, in these first five seasons to see what he can do, put to the test. You know what I mean? Absolutely put to the test. Like, so he has some moments here and there. This episode, he was good. He was good in this episode. He was good in at the questioning scene. The scene when he was getting questioned, he was good. He was very good at the end of the show. So I had no problem with that. He had a scene with Tasha in the car earlier in the season that I thought he did well, acquitted himself well. So I don't think this is a case where the kid can't act. So like he's not Tony Soprano's son. That kid, now that guy, I forgot his name. What's that? The fact that I can't remember his name lets you know that he couldn't act. But Tony's the guy that played Tony Soprano's son was a horrible actor. This is terrible. He was terrible. Michael Rainey Jr. is not that. Like, let's not kid ourselves. So we'll see, we'll see what he's made of season six, because he's going to be a primary. He's going to be a big part of the story without question. He's coming to his own as a drug dealer. He's coming to his own as a villain, as Ghost, 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, whatever you want to call him. He's as a liar, manipulator. The fact that people don't like his character lets you know that he's doing something right. When people hate your character, that means you somewhat have to be acting your ass off in some ways. People are not going to pay attention to someone that can't act. It's just all there is to it. Like the girl that played Holly, you could knock her character, you could have wanted her to die. But the bottom line is that girl, Elizabeth Weaver, was a very good actress. And that contributed to people not liking her character. She played that role and played it well. So I think I think next year you'll see him evolve, his character evolve into being one of the major players on the show. Can he carry that weight? We'll see. The question is, will Power be the same show without 50 Cent? That remains to be seen. A lot of people love the Kanan character. The Kanan character actually grew on me as the seasons progressed. I love the Kanan character. Season two, and that was that was my favorite season. Still my favorite season. But it wasn't about the Kanan character in season two to me. It was about the other stuff that was going on with Lobos and Tommy and Tasha and what have you. Season four, the Kanan character to me really, made his bones. And I'm not saying 50 Cent by any stretch of imagination is a great actor. He's not. But that character, but he did, he did play that character and played it well. In season five, he was, season five, that character, grew on people. And again, it was a very popular character on the show. And we'll see what the show looks like without him. That's a major loss on the show when you lose a character of that ilk. But again, if Michael Rainey Jr. does his job, then people probably will forget the fact that 50 Cent was Kanan. But if he does his job from a standpoint of filling the void, so we'll see what happens. Again, two episodes left. You will have a 75-minute season finale. Still a lot of things that left to be, a couple of things left to be hashed out. You can almost predict what's going to happen in the next episode. I think Tommy's father, I think Tommy's going to kill Teresi. Season finale, who knows what's going to happen. But the one thing for sure, none of the big four will be touched. That's one thing I can predict. I feel confident in saying that none of the big four will be touched in terms of Ghost, Tommy, Tasha, or Angela. 7:30 on this latest edition of the Real Deal podcast. Again, we will do a little mini college football preview in a later podcast later on this week. We'll look into some college football matchups of week one. Get into a couple things in the NFL as well as we head full steam ahead in terms of the football season. We'll get into a couple things going on with the NFL. A couple of quarterback situations that we'll discuss, including the one in Philadelphia. So we'll talk about that. And I want to leave a couple notes. One, congratulations to Jemele Hill. She gets the $6 million buyout from ESPN. To me, it is addition by subtraction from the standpoint of her subtracting ESPN from her life. ESPN, Jemele Hill is a talented writer. She's a excellent personality as far as speaking her mind. To me, her career is going to do nothing but you know, go even to another level, getting away from ESPN. Getting away from ESPN to me was like getting away from just a bad girlfriend or boyfriend. And to me, she's going to grow. She's going to grow. This will be a move that will take her career to another level. So she gets the buyout. She'll be able to do some things. Be able to tell, you know, her story. Don't have to worry about being censored. Don't have to worry about Twitter getting, you know, people talking about what she says on Twitter. She'll be able to completely free speak her mind without anybody interfering. This again, I don't can't understand why strong opinions by sports personalities that are not shock value. Aren't appreciated or get shunned upon. Jemele Hill gives strong opinions. They're genuine opinions that she believes in. And you don't have to agree with them. You don't have to agree with them, but they are her opinions. She's not saying them just to get attention. She's not saying them just to get a reaction. She genuinely believes what she's saying. So hats off to her. Certainly good luck to her in the future. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. As always, this is the Real Deal Podcast, Season 11, coming up soon, a couple months. We're going to do Season 11 premiere in October this year, so that's right around the corner. Real Deal Podcast, telling it like it is with no apologies. I'm out.